But as medical treatments get more powerful, they also become more dangerous. And putting your faith in hospitals is not always a good idea, as Gary Wolkstein found out. Now, Gary had every reason to trust his doctors. 2 years ago, they found a tumor on one of his kidneys, removed it, and gave him a clean bill of health. No more cancer, no further treatment, no expected recurrence. So life was looking pretty good. The day after his wife left to take their oldest daughter to begin college, Gary had what he thought would be a routine annual exam, including a CAT scan. Turned out to be anything but routine.
About 4:30 that afternoon on Tuesday, I was home, and there was a telephone call, and I picked up the phone, and it was the urologist, and he said in a rather brusque manner, "I have some bad news for you." And I kind of found myself without breath, but said, "Well, what?" And he says, "Well, this does not look good, but we think there may be metastases of your cancer from your kidney." The statistics were incredibly grim. There was 2 tumors on my spine and a possible additional one in the same kidney, of which part of it had been removed. Cancer cells, while they are in the kidney, if they are removed, you have a very good prognosis. If they metastasize, the prognosis is very bad, because cancer cells are ones which are used to filter out poisons from the body. So they are so resilient that chemotherapy is basically ineffective. In the meantime, my wife and 3 children were stopping in Detroit on the way to Cleveland to stay at my wife's father's home. And my wife called me on Wednesday to find out how the tests had gone. I mean, this is going to be just another 6-month check. And so I did, thinking about it, and I talked to some friends, and I concluded that this had been so startling, so upsetting to me. I was too afraid of what might happen with my wife and my family while they were driving, that this could distract my wife. She could get into an accident. I could lose my whole family. So I decided the only alternative was to lie. And when I spoke to her on Wednesday night, I basically just said, it went okay, and changed the subject as quickly as I could. I did feel hopeless and that went through, why is this happening to me, and how can this be happening to me, that there's so much more that I want to do with my life. There were interesting periods of real calm in which one of my friends asked me whether or not I felt ready to die. And it was funny that my reaction was immediately, not at all. I had no sense whatsoever that what I was going to do in my life, or the effect I was going to have on other people and the relationships I was going to have, was drawing to a conclusion. And I had this sense, which in a way kind of seems pat, but it nevertheless rang very true for me, which was I was committed to watching my kids grow up. I just felt, no, this is not going to be cut short, and that as long as I was going to be able to, you know, actively be a part of their lives and be a part of my wife's life, I was going to do what was necessary. That night, my wife returned with 2 of our children. When she returned, I had the desire to immediately tell her all that had happened, because there's nobody in the world that's closer to me, and I wanted to share with her the worst news I'd ever had in my life. But I But there was a part of me where I just realized somebody cannot be told that level of intensity when they've just been upset about dropping their daughter off at college. I mean, she was already, you know, quite worried about that, and it was a big change in our lives. And to come back and get a report like this was just too much. I mean, she had just driven 10 hours, and to tell her everything at once, I thought was just not fair and not humane. So I asked my wife after she'd settled in a little bit to go for a walk. And during this walk, I told her part of the story. And I was vague about statistics, and I was vague about the areas that made it seem even more grim. And just told her, well, I was going to be going in for more information, and that we would just make decisions about what to do. My wife came back from this walk and immediately called up one of our very close friends who's a physician and an internist. And during this time, I was fortunate enough to even have another friend in town who is not only an internist, a physician and an internist, but she had experience working in nephrology, kidney treatment. In any case, what happened from there was an appointment was set up for a second appointment with this oncologist. Julie and Laurel, two of these physicians, actually came to that appointment with me. They wanted to look at the CAT scans. They wanted to question the doctor, and they proceeded to do that. None of them were convinced that the diagnosis was accurate. They pushed, and I pushed, for a more definitive test. And the more definitive test was an MRI. The oncologist was quite resistant and basically said that he felt more than 95% certain of the diagnosis. The sense I had of him when he was talking to me was that he felt I was in denial, and I didn't want to hear it, and my friends didn't want to hear it. And what he wanted to do was to press us to begin high-dosage radiation to my spine. And what we later learned was this was not the protocol. The protocol was somebody who has metastases about a year from when they've had a malignancy in their tumor and it looks like it's spread, you don't get an MRI. One of my friends, with exasperation, just said, well, if you won't schedule it, I will. And she went out in the hall, took out her cell phone, called up another hospital. And this is during Labor Day weekend, which is, of course, very difficult to schedule anything, and got me an appointment within a few days. My friend set it up. I went in for the MRI. The other friend called up the radiologist and found out what his telephone number was so that she could dial up and read his dictation, because, you know, when a radiologist reads it, they actually dictate. She read it that night, and what he said was he found no metastases. He did not find that there were cancer spots on my spine, but found what are known as Schmerl's nodes. Those are benign nodes, which can be the result of just a fall. And yes, there'd be some additional bone growth, but it's not cancer. And he was quite definitive about this. My friend called me and was just ecstatic. I mean, she said, there is no better news that you could receive. And I learned later on that what happened was there was a whole gathering of all the radiologists who went over these films and one by one concurred that it was indeed Schmerl's nodes, benign. Over the course of the two appointments after that, I was so disappointed that no time during these conversations did this oncologist ever apologize, ever accept any responsibility for having strongly recommended I get high doses of radiation to my spine, or that he had for over the course of what was now about a period of a month put myself and my wife through hell. I mean, we all felt that I had slim to no chance of recovering from a fatal disease and these metastases. And his way of responding was, isn't this wonderful? He kind of jumped on the bandwagon to, this is incredible news, and it's almost as if you were at the in the electric chair and the governor called and you've got a reprieve. So I look back on this, and having told this story to some personal friends, most of them gulp when they hear the story and saying, well, I don't have, you know, physician friends, and nor do I have anyone else who I could really turn to as an advocate, and probably I would follow the recommendations of the physician. So there's a certain responsibility I have to kind of pass on the message that people really have to advocate for themselves.
Gary Wolkstein is currently a practicing attorney in Madison, Wisconsin. Had he gone ahead with the radiation therapy, he would be in a wheelchair today.